Welcome to the Tuesday Talk Show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. We'll invite your phone calls after the top of the hour news, but if you want to jot our phone number down now, it's 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live and let you air your question or comment to our guest. Our guest today from LaGrange Pass City Council, Council President Vanessa Ogier and Councillor Joel King. Welcome to the microphones of KAJO Radio. Thank you. Glad to have you with us this morning.
Good morning.
Top of the day.
And to you both, welcome. Lots of things on your plate, I imagine, right now, but a lot of the things have gone by the wayside. First of all, kudos, I think, are coming your way from most of the city in terms of cleaning the parks. I say cleaning the parks, removing the homeless from the parks, and allowing more people back in and providing space for those homeless to go. And we're not quite done with that situation. As a matter of fact, it's going to be an ongoing situation. So where do we really stand now with the situation moving almost primarily onto the J Street side and also at the corner of 6th and A?
So the city has those two sites designated for people to sleep. There's also several other places that nonprofits have that have advantages and disadvantages to the individuals, such as the Gospel Rescue Mission and places like that. And then there's also some transitory housing associated with mental health, with options, and with drug treatment. We're starting to get the transitional housing to come back on with OnTrack, though that's taken a long time. It's interesting, though, Chuck, there's no county in the state of Oregon that has more beds and more shelters than they do unhoused homeless. And other counties have an even bigger deficit than our county, whether it's Jackson County, Deschutes County, Lane County, Portland, and then Seattle and San Francisco are even in worse shape. So it's a regional problem.
Well, ongoing, and quite frankly, I can't deal with the and I've been to Seattle, and I've seen what they're doing there. So I understand that. We're not alone. I've driven up and down I-5, and I've seen the homeless camps in Eugene and Salem and Portland. All right. So, but we're dealing with what we have here. We have moved the homeless primarily onto the J Street property. There's been lots of talk about that in particular. And in lieu of the forecast that's coming up the next 3 days, with temperatures certainly in triple digits, has there been any movement towards one, shade in that J Street area? And two, do we have any sites of cooling centers yet?
I did want to take an opportunity to answer your original question of kind of where we're at with the situation.
Sure.
And I wanted to address some rumors that I've heard and seen online. We know that the injunction has been a really long time coming and that recently the Supreme Court made a decision in favor of the city. Where we're at now with the injunction is both sides have agreed that it is moot. So we're waiting for the official proceedings in that arena, but it's agreed on the other side that the injunction is moot at this time. So it's technically still on the books.
Technically still there, but we're okay.
Yeah, so we're just waiting for those official proceedings from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. In the meantime, the council has adopted new camping regulations in compliance with House Bill 3115. This is a House bill that came down from the state that required cities have objectively reasonable areas in the community, essentially where people could camp and rest. And so I have seen some rumors online that the council is doing this just spontaneously, but this really is to get into compliance with state law because we haven't, basically the injunction has been 3115, but the city didn't have the choice of where people could camp. So now that we have that choice, we have the city council has made the two choices of the 6 and A location and the J Street site as well. We know that the J Street site is much larger, so it has, it's been occupied heavier. And we have a grassroots nonprofit group, Mint, Mobile Integrative Navigation Team. They've been doing some really great work down there, and they are coordinating with the council and letting us know in real time of what's going well and what's not going well. So this is a brand new set of rules that we've just implemented in the last couple of weeks, and so it certainly will be a developing situation.
All right. At the last council meeting, and that was at the emergency meeting last Wednesday, It was talked about that there's no shade at that particular area, so we're dealing with that coming up here in a couple of days. The council did say that shade could be provided, provided it was not city-provided, but would meet certain criteria. What do we know about the situation as it stands right now?
Yeah, it's, my where I was coming from last week in that special meeting was not to get in the way of the work that they're doing, is to allow them to do the work that they need to do. And so that allowed them to install picnic tables at their own expense, install shade at their own expense, and provide water at their own expense as well. And so I did see online that Mint had set up, I think, 10 separate canopies on the site in working alongside the fire marshal to ensure that they meet code. So I know that there is shade at the site. I don't know if it's going to be adequate for the heat advisory coming up, but I do know that they've installed some pretty large canopies out there. And they're not the Costco canopies that you may think of. It's more the size of a carport.
They're not the $100 ones you go into Buy Mart and get.
Yes,
right,
exactly.
Right. These are things that are well anchored and would withstand some weather and not be dangerous should a wind come up, things like that.
Right.
Okay. So, and the fire marshal was there with all of that.
Yeah, they worked closely with the fire marshal.
All right. Joe looked like you were chumming to get on the bit there.
Well, no, I'm just going to say you can stepped up to the plate and agreed to provide water.
Okay, so we've got water and shade provided, at least in the J Street area. What's the situation with the downtown one at the corner of 6th and A?
I just stopped by there on the way up. I don't see any shade canopies. I might have missed it, but I'm sure that they have water. The other thing that happened before you can step up to the plate, I took 7 cases of water out to J Street and just distributed it, and it was a good education. In terms of what was going on and what wasn't going on. A young man helped me. He was from Southern California. He's trying to immigrate to Oregon. There were several people there that were unable to care for themselves. They really belonged in assisted living in a nursing home, not living in an unsheltered place in a designated city spot, you know, and there's people like that that live in their own homes that should be in unassisted living. I mean, there's people everywhere that have that situation. And then there was another young guy. He showed me, and this is not to stereotype people, because there's people of all different kinds, and everybody has their own story. But he was very blatant, and he had meth, and he opened up the meth thing in front of me. And I said, you know, you need to get rid of that stuff. And he says, well, yeah, it's not drugs. But he said, I'm going to go into rehab next week. So
had enough supply to get him to next week?
I don't know. I don't know, Chuck. But so it's a challenge, and it's going to continue to be a challenge. And we don't want to stereotype any segment of our population, and it's been a long chain of events that have resulted in this, and we see the symptoms. We're dealing with the symptoms. We're not dealing with the cause.
No, we can't get to the cause yet, and I'm not sure that our society can right now. But dealing with the symptoms right now, and you mentioned lots of people there who needed other care. The Parker House is designed to help some of that here with their, they're putting in, what, about 17 individual places behind them. What is the status there right now? Are they ready for occupancy yet, or are we still waiting? What are we waiting on? Do we know?
I don't want to speak on behalf of Mint, but from what I've observed and what I've learned in speaking with them is they are a volunteer group to begin with, and I think most of them work full-time. Mm-hmm. A few of them are retired, so you know they only have some. They have a very limited time and energy. They've spent a lot of that. Excuse me. They've spent a lot of that limited time and energy on moving people from park to park. The people that Counselor King speaks of that maybe are immobile or medically fragile or elderly, and they spend the weekend that we had the rule change. They spent over 11 hours moving people from city parks to the designated areas. So, if you can imagine, as volunteers, if they are spending their time doing those things, they are not necessarily focusing or spending that limited time on getting that shelter propped up. So I know that hopefully now that people are mostly settled at the J Street site and we have extended the allowable camping times, hopefully they can, you know, pivot into focusing on getting that worked up. I know that they still need to meet with individuals in the construction trade to revamp the building and apply for permits and such. And so I'm hoping that that work will begin now.
They're looking at putting in 17 pallet houses behind the Parker House location there, and they've got room for that. And I am assuming they're approved for that. And I thought the pallet houses were available. So the holdup is what? Do we know?
I'm not certain the exact logistics.
Okay. And I realize that's out of your realm. And certainly kudos to the Mint people. We've seen them. They're passionate. They're certainly welcome. And their efforts are not going unnoticed. So kudos to those Mint volunteers. We're just trying to figure out where to send people. Joel, you outlined a lot of areas here. Of course, the Gospel Rescue Mission is not a low-barrier place, but they have vacancies right now. And what last I heard, they're about half full.
They've seen an uptake in use over the last month. They still got some vacancies, but it's a lot less than what it used to be. And they're building some small houses along with several churches are developing some small houses where their home, seniors that can no longer maintain their home and it gets too expensive for them, they can move into this little house, and it's a lot better for them. They got services right there, or they got care. And then they get paid for their house, and then the house gets rebuilt and sold for on the market to help relieve the housing shortage. So so they're in the process of doing that. They have a fundraiser with a barbecue coming up. If you look at their website, you can go and support that effort in those little houses.
All right. Where is that? Do we have any more details on the barbecue? I mean, I like barbecue.
You know, I'm negligent. I should have brought them with me. But if you go to their gospel face page, Gospel Rescue face page, I'm going to go if I don't have a big conflict. And it's a good way to support what's going on in our community. Mint, you could also, I join you in applauding them as well as Vanessa. If you want to help, you could also be part of their organization because they need volunteers. They're getting burned out.
Well, there are other volunteer organizations right now in the process of putting some things up. And in fact, just down the street from us here, I think this is Options just down the street here. That is not that old, I say old, former pawn shop there and that facility that is being renovated as we speak. But looking ahead, and we'll take a pause here, but something to contemplate is what happens next May when we need to build a water treatment plant. So contemplate that, and we'll be right back.
A family.
Welcome back. Tuesday Talk Show in Progress, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, we want to thank you for joining us. City councilors are in studio today. Council President Vanessa Auger, Councilor Joel King here with us. We're talking about, of course, the home. That's been our ongoing conversation here for, it seems like, years. The term was used earlier about spontaneity, but how can it be spontaneous when we've been dealing this, for 5 years? Looking for answers to. We've got some right now, but basically the answers that we have right now are short-term. So let's look ahead a little bit. How far ahead have we looked? Have we planned for next spring? Or have we planned for the winter here when J Street could turn into a big mud puddle? Okay.
Both sites really are at the inception temporary. They were, you know, quick places that we could bring online that the city already owned. And so we know that the water treatment plant will soon be constructed on the J Street site. That is temporary. Even more temporary is the 6A location. That was really a placeholder until we could get the lot next to the police station opened up. Right now, there is a building that's outdated and needs to be removed, and so that award, that project was just awarded for demolition of that building, and it should be demolished by the end of the month. So the idea is that that will be the property on in that area. In terms of the J Street site, that will certainly need to have an alternative location by next spring.
All right, is there any talk about another location here? Are we Have there been discussions about it? I'm sure there have been discussions about it. Is there another site that's coming up as one of the top picks?
Any talk about tentative sites at this time would be premature. We need to work through that. One of the things that happens, and it happened at J Street, to the business owner there, a young man who has a business, he came to work the other day, and his parking lot was full of vehicles of unhoused homeless people, and he couldn't get his semi-trucks in there or his fleet that he was servicing. And he was kind of surprised, which was unfortunate. And so at this point in time, it's a work in progress. Any discussion of future sites, there is a site that is going to be needed. It'd be premature to say it's going to be this site or that site at this point in time. And we have to look at not just the impacts to one segment of the population, but to the entire community.
First of all, let's deal with that that gentleman at businesses on the next to the J Street property. There was talk of adding some temporary fence or permanent fence there. Where do we stand right now, and have there been talks with that business owner?
Well, the city manager was directed by the city council to work directly with him to make sure whatever we do is cost effective and effective in terms of his business. Because he's had vandalism with some of the fleet. He's got contracts with fleet.
Yeah, vandalism and theft both is what I understand.
Yeah. So the city manager will come back to us with a proposal after negotiating with him one-on-one. It would be inappropriate for the city council to say, hey, this is going to fix your problem. We're just going to do it without his or her input.
All right. Well, go ahead, Vanessa.
Sorry to interrupt you. I just wanted to be really clear on that. The issues that gentleman is experiencing have been ongoing issues for years. Mill Street is kind of infamously used as, in a car camping. And so it sounds like that's been an ongoing issue. And rightfully so, that gentleman's concerns have, elevated due to the increased traffic in the area. So it's certainly warranted, but this isn't a brand new issue as well.
Are the car campers migrating towards the new campsites?
I think that, Mill Street is still being used as, an informal car camping area, but there's just an increase in general traffic in the area down J Street because it is a road, but it's a dead-end road, and so I'm sure that they're not used to receiving a lot of people going back and forth in front of their business, and so it has elevated those concerns, rightfully so.
With the two new campgrounds, the two designated areas for camping right now, instituted and working, we still haven't dealt with car camping, and there's still a significant amount of that throughout the area. Is that the next step? Has the city council dealt with that at all, or are the plans too?
There's several options there. The city invited people that have parking lots, like churches, nonprofits, to participate in a parking program.
Hasn't been very successful.
Hasn't been well received, and understandably so. Bend does not have a camping area for vehicles. They have their existing city ordinance, and at this point in time, we've chosen to go with our existing ordinance and manage it appropriately. So we'll see how it goes.
All right. Vanessa, any word on car camping from your perspective?
I am in support of the city working with the community groups to get a car camping program up and running. This is one of the largest invisible factions of homeless are people that are full-time employed and live inside of their vehicle. In several council meetings, we've heard from single women who are, mid-age to later age, living in their vehicles because they've had spouses that died or their social security just doesn't, cover the cost of housing. And so that's the group that I am really deeply concerned about. And so I would be supportive of the city working with community groups. As Councillor King mentioned, we did enact ordinances that allow for these types of programs, but maybe the marketing hasn't been enough, maybe the incentivizing hasn't been enough, and so I think that the community would benefit from the council revisiting those things.
All right, well, how would you like to see the council revisit that and encourage incentives? Are there things that you'd encourage the council to do it individually? Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think one of the best things that the council could do would be to directly incentivize the requirements of the program. So the ordinance says that you have to have sanitation services, you have to have a hand washing station and restrooms. And so maybe if the council provided some type of low-level grant for, you know, annual costs of those things, if it's, you know, $1,000 or $2,000 or whatever that looks like, if it gets, you know, a dozen car campers off of the street and into, you know, some sense of stability, I think that would be beneficial.
All right. Joel, you wanted to weigh in on that.
Well, again, adding to what Vanessa said, we're again treating the symptoms. And that it's expensive. It's not that it's not needed, but it doesn't cure the situation. And so later on in the program, if we could, I'd like to discuss the chain of events and my thoughts on really how do we get past the symptoms.
Well, we have time for that in the next segment of the program, as a matter of fact, coming up after the top of the hour news. Thank you for the convenient lead-in there, Mr. K. He's just vying for my job. What can I tell you, folks? You're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio, and we do invite your phone calls after the news that's upcoming here. If you want to jot that phone number down, it's 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live. Let you air your question or comment to our guest. And any ideas that you have about some of the things that we've been discussing and been discussing for 5 years, please let us know. The more brains we apply to this, the better off we all will be.
Oh, man.
Once again, you're listening to KAJO AM 1270, 99.7 on the FM band, and heard all around the world on KAJO.com.
A recent Clouser.
You're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. Thank you very much for joining us. Number to call is 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live and let you air your question or comment to our guest today. From the Grants Pass City Council, it is Council President Vanessa Ogier and Councillor Joel King are with us. And once again, I want to thank you very much for your time here. Let's just deal real briefly with tomorrow night's meeting, a regular business session coming up tomorrow night. And it looks like a relatively quick agenda. And I say that relatively quickly, and suddenly it's going past 9 o'clock. But it should be fairly quickly tomorrow night. But there is one ordinance about the municipal code describing the part, basically defining what is allowed in the camping areas. That's pretty straightforward. Is there any controversy talking about what we're looking at here? It's just changing the codes to really say that all city property is basically declared a park, and here's what you can do in the designated camping areas. Is that a fair assessment of what is being said there?
Yes, there is. There may be some minor adjustments in some of the things. For example, camp spaces being restricted to 8x8. And maybe that needs to be expanded a little bit. Maybe it doesn't, but there will be those type of discussions. But in terms of it codifies really what the council has already discussed, and so that's the next step. We have to put it into code and then deal with it appropriately.
Let me read from it here exactly. It says, for the purposes of this charter, all parks, landscaped areas surrounding or upon city developments, including but not limited to city halls, community centers, police and fire stations, parking lots, traffic islands and dividers, urban beautification areas owned or maintained by the city, undeveloped property owned by the city and authorized camping locations provided in this chapter shall be considered city parks. So basically they're saying, no camping in city parks. These are the parks. And when you go, it's 8x8 and what about a 6 feet in buffer in between. What about the length of time allowed in the city parks? As I understand it now, you're allowed there to stay there a week. And then you're probably posted by the either the city police or the community service officers. And then you've got another 72 hours to leave or vacate and go someplace else.
That's a legacy that comes from what was going on in the parks and what the state law requires. Actually, it goes a little bit beyond that. The other thing is it goes to where, why would you extend it even further? Is because to connect to social services, you need to know where somebody is. And so, like, when we were running our medical office and we had, I think 300 people that were on Medicaid, and some of them were struggling big time. You'd call them up and you couldn't get a hold of them. You couldn't get them in. You couldn't treat them. You couldn't refer them to social services, and it was very frustrating. And then you'd see where they went to the emergency room, and that was very expensive. So it's an attempt, I think, to relieve, again, another symptom. It's not the cause. It's just a symptom. And trying to get them into services.
All right. This has always puzzled me because we've got them in a place right now where it's been designated and a lot of people approve what has been done. And suddenly then we make them move. And without another place to move to, there's one other place, but it's pretty small in comparison. And that has just been a puzzlement to me. Why do we make them move? And does that go back to our ordinances or what's described in the Oregon laws?
Well, from my perspective, if it was a managed campground and a nonprofit stepped up and had a grant to manage it, obviously that wouldn't be in effect. It's an unmanaged.
But that's not our situation.
No, no, it's an unmanaged situation, and the police and the law end up being the manager once people cross the line and commit a crime, and that is an expensive way of doing it, not preferable way. So then you have people that become entrenched, and then the biggest gun rules.
Okay, so and I know there are decent people out there through
sure.
unfortunate circumstances end up in this situation here.
Sure.
But at the end of what now? The weekend plus the 72 hours, it's 10 days. Suddenly, I get a citation and I'm a criminal, or I'm outside the law, basically. And it's like a traffic ticket. But I've got to appear and that money comes out of my pocket. And for some reason, that hits me as strange.
You know, it hits me as strange too, Chuck. I think the police exhibit a lot of discretion. One of the things that's happened is at least in California, they announced it in San Francisco, but they other communities are doing it also and haven't announced it, that they're sending people to other places. And so we got about 3 weeks ago, we got an influx of people that we hadn't seen before. And I mean, how do you deal with that? So one of the things...
Are you saying that we had people bust in from California?
That's what the mayor of San Francisco said.
Oh, okay.
And that he did it.
Mayor of San Francisco did not say that they bus people to Grants Pass. I just want to be really clear. Okay. The rumor mill is a dangerous thing.
Okay.
Well, what he said was they bus them to their home, trying to connect them with their home, and that he bus them to Southern Oregon, to Oregon, to Texas, and it was cheaper for them with the bus ticket than to provide the services and the housing. Because they had provided the services and housing, and it wasn't enough, and it was costing them a lot of money. So there's that factor we're dealing with. But I agree with you. It's somewhat the ideal situation would be that it becomes a managed situation where people have some stability. They're connected to social services. They got transitory housing that they can transfer back into the mainstream of society. Unfortunately, we're not there yet. So we got this legacy from how we manage the parks.
All right. Anybody out there a crystal ball with them? Where would you like to see this go, either of you?
One of the things I think we need to do is develop an even better sense of community where we take care of each other. And how do we do that? You know, that's not something that a forester or a city manager or a radio announcer or a dispatcher have experience in, is building that sense of community. When you build a sense of community where the richness of relationships overcomes scarcity of resources and you work together, as an example, the city and the county, instead of viewing each other as political enemies, we view each other as allies in common goals. When you see the nonprofits, not necessarily, and I'm not saying this happens, sometimes it does, maybe all too often, but to enhance their own budget at the expense of collaborating with other nonprofits to, and they collaborate a lot. I'm not saying that they don't, but that's another example of where you have this sense of community. And so like the County Committee on Health and Mental Health and Addiction Services, where you have several nonprofits around the table working together, is a great example of that, where they can supplement each other in their funding and their efforts, and not one nonprofit try to do it all. So as you establish this sense of community, then you have you start to treat the causes, not the symptoms, and you have people working together to provide for a managed situation, where like in Medford, and it hasn't fix the problem there as well, just because the problem is so overwhelming and they got more people on their waiting list than we have unhoused homeless. But at least you have a place where people can go and stay and be connected to social services, and it's safe. And they don't have that option to move. They do. The nonprofits manage it, not the city. If you look at government managing anything, and I've been in government for 30 years, it doubles the expense and halves the effectiveness. But if you have a nonprofit or a private enterprise managing it, and so they have a time limit down there where people have time to make choices and decisions. And I'm not real familiar with what it is, but say if you haven't made your decision by 30 days or something like that, then you need to move on because we can't continue to support you if you're not going to help yourself. So we need to evolve towards that sense of community, and
it's
going to be a challenge.
Now, is that sense of community that you're talking about here, is that what you foresee as the way to treat the symptoms, treat the causes of this rather than the symptoms?
So from my perspective, I'm a forester, okay? I've worked in the woods. I didn't manage a community of people. I managed a community of trees and animals and water and things like that. And one of my mentors said, you know, how you manage the forest and whether it stays healthy or not really affects the health of the communities. Now that's a stretch, and people don't think of that. Our forests right now are under a lot of stress, just like our communities. When you're under stress, the old and the young die. And so the older growth trees get diseased or burn up, and the younger ones can't compete for moisture and they die. And the same thing in our community. When we're under stress and you look at these camps, who are most affected by the stress? The very young and the very old. It doesn't mean that the other folks aren't stressed. So one of the things we need to do ecologically and economically is look at all the factors that are causing this stress in our community, not just treating these symptoms, because we'll chase those symptoms till we die, and as we found in the rest of the states, that hasn't solved it. And from my perspective, the healthy forests can provide healthy communities, and I would leave that up to the community to decide how that could happen, but it definitely could happen. And it's happened before.
You're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tuesday Talk Show in progress. Ladies and gentlemen, the city councilors are in. We're going to go right now to Council President Vanessa Ogier. Give her equal time here to respond. Joel kind of laid out some things here that he foresees as perhaps a way to generally overcome what we're looking at in terms of instead of just treating the symptoms, treating the causes. What's your perspective?
Yeah, sure. Circling back to the original crystal ball question of where do you see this going, and you know the perplexity of why make people move every 10 days. I don't see the need for it as well, which I think my vote last week reflects that really clearly. A majority of the people that we have on the J Street site, I'm not too familiar with the 6A, but the J Street specifically, I've heard from various stakeholders that work in those in that area. And they, again, this can't say this enough, they are medically fragile, they are elderly, they are immobile. They really are people that struggle very much to get up and move. So I don't quite understand that either. I share the confusion with you on that. Looking to the future, you know, right now what we have is not a managed campground per se, but it's possibly the very next best thing. We have Mint, a grassroots organization that is in that space every single day. We have our police department that is, you know, keeping tabs on the situation. And so although we don't have necessarily a camp manager, we do have eyes on those spaces pretty frequently, which I'm very thankful for all the work that's being done there. And so I think moving forward, it's really important that the city works closely with Mint and any other group that wants to do this type of work. They really are the best option that we have right now going forward for a low barrier shelter. And so if we're able, the city is able to be good partners with that organization and prop them up, and they are able to be successful in having a low barrier shelter, that directly equates to less people occupying public spaces. And it's less people that the city has to provide sanitation services for. And it's less people that the city has to, you know, instruct our police to go oversight and make sure that they're following the rules. So I think that that would be a direct benefit. And even looking, you know, expanding that picture outward, you know, one of the biggest issues related to homelessness is housing. We know that the city of Grants Pass is suffering housing crisis, and we have for, you know, arguably a decade or more. And I'm really proud of the work that the council has done recently in that realm, and I would like to touch on that. I think it's really worth mentioning. At one of our recent meetings, we actually discussed the development of 102 units. Now, they were separate developments, but that's the total amount that we discussed in one meeting. And just 56 of those were incentivized directly through the construction excise tax program that the council enacted just 3 years ago. So just in that really small time of that program getting up and running and collecting the half of a percent of on construction permits, we were able to incentivize $500,000 in grants to 56 units. I believe 36 of those will be low-income rental units for veterans, and 20 of those will be below-market-rate occupied senior housing, and that'll be owner-occupied. So I think looking at the really big picture, the city not only working with the nonprofits and the police department that are doing the work in the community provided, you know, the public-provided spaces, but also really nailing down, you know, how the city can incentivize the development of housing, because that really is what gets people off of the street is houses.
All right. That brings to another couple of questions. First of all, and I know the city has just purchased or is in the process of purchasing, crossing all the T's and dotting I's for the property at Washington and Midland to incentivize housing there. How is that going? What do you foresee happening in that area?
The Washington project is really exciting to me. Last fall at the League of Oregon Cities Conference, I did a tour of Eugene's Urban Renewal Agency. And I know that Eugene cannot be compared to Grants Pass necessarily, but there was one project there that really caught my eye, and it was previously a vacant piece of land that the city of Eugene was able to invest just a few million dollars in. I know that sounds a lot, but in Urban Renewal Agency, we're talking about tens of millions of dollars. For housing specifically, we have a fund with $10 million. The city of Eugene was able to incentivize a few million dollars, and they got almost 100 units of market rate housing above. And then the floor level is mixed use commercial. And it's actually a really popular gathering space on Friday and Saturday evenings. And they have live music in this alleyway. And so not necessarily saying that that's what needs to happen on the Washington site, but I would really like to see some type of mixed use on the bottom floor, as well as housing above. I think it could be really exciting.
All right. Now, will that be city constructed or a public-private partnership to go into that situation? Or are we just going to resell it to a developer?
I see it as being a public-private partnership, more than likely. I can't see into the future, but that's usually how that works, is the city will own the property, and just like we did on Nebraska Ramsey, sell it at a really great price, or put out an RFP, a request for proposal, that says this is what we would like the project to look like at this site, and work with that developer in that way.
All right, we're coming down. I've got about 3.5 minutes left here of the program today. And Joel, I know you wanted to jump in here right now, so go, man.
Okay, I just want to say really quick some of the good things going on. Mm-hmm. Fruitdale Cottages, and I agree with what Vanessa said about the other property, where the contractor has started proposed cottages out on Fruitdale. M Street Townhouses construction has kicked off this week, and that's just several of the new housing developments that are occurring. I think we're on track, Vanessa may correct me, to achieve our goal of units, additional units that we want per year, though it's going to be an ongoing struggle. The other good thing in terms of just developing a sense of community, we got Movies in the Park back last week, and there was 150 people there of friends and family members that watched Movies in the Park. And then the Economic Development Division, they've been trying to work at attracting tourists and increasing overnight stays, and there's been several of their works that have resulted in additions to our local economy, which is a good thing.
All right. Thank you very much, Joel. All right, Vanessa, you have about 2 minutes here to wrap things up here. What should we take away from today, and what do you want to hear from your people out there? There are lots of areas we want to talk about today, but I guess we'll hold at any rate. So you have about 2 minutes here.
Wonderful. I did want to give a quick shout out to the Gospel Rescue Mission. We talked about that earlier, their fundraiser. It looks like it's going to be Saturday, September 28th, and that's 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. This is for their Mission View Village, which would be an independent senior living community. It looks like it would be off of Harbeck Road. So they have single tickets and family tickets available for that. Just wanted to give that shout out. Additional shout outs is we have openings on several city committees, including the Urban Tree Advisory Committee, Historical Buildings and Sites Commission, the Housing Advisory Committee, the Parks Committee, and the Tourism Advisory Committee. So if any of your interests lie in those areas, I really encourage to check out the city's website and apply for them. As well, we will be creating a public safety advisory committee, and this will be voted on September 18th. It's still pretty broad at this time as to what may be actually adopted, but this really, you know, my motivation for supporting this is receiving input from the community on how we can more closely align expenditures and revenues with the necessary growth needed of not only our community, but also our public safety divisions, our dispatch, our fire, and our police services. You know, the council tried to unilaterally you know, bring those things closer together, and it was met with some, you know, some opposition from the community. So to work more closely with them, we will be creating either a committee or a task force so that we can work closely and get that more aligned. As well, we will be hearing from our Downtown and Main Street, a new group that has been formed. So we'll be hearing what they're working on and what their future goals are. So those are the two things that I really look forward to in the near future.
Joel, Vanessa, thank you very much for your time today. You've been listening to the Tuesday Talk Show.
At Grove.